Today on Enduring Word with David Guzik, pastor of Calvary Chapel, Santa Barbara.
Moses, you can't see me, but you're going to see the after effects of where I have been. One commentator named Kaiser says this. He says the word could just as well and more accurately be rendered the after effects of the radiant glory which had just passed by. It's as if the God says, Moses, how are we going to do it? You stand in the cleft of the rock, that protected place. I'll put my hand over you. I'll pass by. And once I'm safely by, I'll withdraw my hand. But then you can see the after effects. And that'll be all the glory that you can handle.
Many Christians today claim to have encounters with the Lord and talk about having seen the glory of God. In today's message, Pastor David challenges the experience of some of these people by sharing with us Moses' experience of seeing the glory of God. Moses asked God to see his glory in Exodus chapter 33. He probably didn't realize the full weight of what he was asking. Pastor David equates it with asking to live within a mile of the sun. The glory of God is not a light thing. Are you experiencing his glory? Now, let's join Pastor David for today's edition of Enduring Word.
And I'm going to use a word that nobody uses anymore. I wouldn't be surprised if many of us don't even know what this word means. It's the word importunate. Importunate. You say, well, what does that word mean? Well, here's the dictionary definition. Importunate means persistent, especially to the point of annoyance or intrusion. It's funny because I was thinking, oh, can't there be a more modern, you know, word that everybody will lack of? I clicked on my, you know, computer thing on the thesaurus for the word importunate. Nothing came up. Importunate. This idea of, yes, God, you're not going to let go of me. I'm going to hold on to you. I'm going to say, yes, Lord, I must have it. It's that same attitude that Jacob had when he wrestled with the angel. And he said, I will not let you go until you bless me. God, I'm just going to hang on to you until my soul is satisfied. And I know you've spoken your word to me, but I need assurance. Would you please, you know, say it on top of each other again and again. I need this, God. And Moses comes before God in a way that we can maybe simply describe as being importunate. And he says, if your presence does not go with us, do not bring us out. We don't even want to go, Lord. If you don't do this, if you don't make good on your word, it's not worth us doing. And then I love what he says in verse 16. Look at it there in your text. It says, for how then will it be known that your people and I have found grace in your sight except you go with us? Lord, there's nothing you can give us that would show us that you're really with us. You could give us the promised land. You could give us help along the way. But Lord, we don't need those things. What we especially need is you. And then he said this, something really remarkable. Did you notice it? There in verse 16, he says, how will they know that we have found grace in your sight except you go with us? So we shall be separate. Moses wanted something for Israel that would show that they were not like all the other nations. Oh, they're not like the Egyptians. Their God is with them in a special way. Oh, they're not like the Assyrians. Their God is with them in a special way. Oh, they're not like the Hittites. Their God is with them in a special way. And this is what he knew. He knew that only the unique, powerful presence of their God, only this covenant relationship with Yahweh, this unique example of ethical monotheism in the ancient world, that would make them different from all the other ancient peoples. God among them would make them different. And I just need to be very straightforward. If God is really at move in your life, it's going to make you different. Now, I don't mean different in every way. I doubt if God is really at move in your life, you're going to start dressing like an Amish person and driving a buggy. I doubt if God is really with you, you're going to start speaking in King James English and all that kind of thing. No, but there's definite ways that the presence of God at work in your life will make you different. You see, if others live their life with very little purpose, don't you want to be different than that? If others can't seem to have fun without being intoxicated, don't you want to be different than that? If others are dishonest, and they cheat on their taxes, shouldn't you be different than that? If others run after this and that, according to whatever the fashion of the culture or the spirit of the age is, shouldn't you and I be different than that? Now, what's going to make us different? Friends, a list of rules is not going to make us different. Let's make out the great big list of rules. Okay, do this, don't do that. Definitely don't do that. Double dog, do this. No, we're not talking about a list of rules. We're talking about the Spirit of God, the presence of God at work in a life, dominating a life. And honestly, here's our problem. Oftentimes we feel so insecure about who we are in Jesus Christ that we desperately don't want to be different. It's as if we want to shout to the world, hey, everybody, look at how just like you we really are. Friends, this world doesn't need people who are just like them. They need people who have the presence of God in their life that make them separate in the appropriate ways. Again, I'm not talking about, you know, dressing Amish or something like that. But I'm talking about different in the appropriate ways. That is something that God uses. And so it was important for Israel to know this for themselves, but it was also important for the other nations to know this. Now notice this, he says this, in verse 17, he says, so the Lord said to Moses, I will also do this thing that you have spoken, for you have found grace in my sight, and I know you by name. It's like, again, okay, Moses, I give up. White flag of surrender. You have prevailed with me. You've been bold enough, can I use the word again, importunate enough to come and ask these things, and now I will give it to you. Now I grant you these things. These things are yours because you and I have come together in this beautiful relationship and have received it from me. And then verse 18, Moses, if he was importunate before, look at him now in verse 18. And he said, please show me your glory. Moses won a yes answer from God. God, we need your special presence with us. Yes, God said, I'll give it to you. God, we need a confirmation of your presence. We need you just to make it all certain and sure. God says, yes. God, we need you to be in our lives and make us different. We don't want to be like all the other nations. Would you do this in our life? God says, yes, yes, I'll do it all. Yet for all of that, Moses was still not satisfied in his relationship with God. Everything that he had experienced from God up to that point just made him want more. And now he gets so bold, maybe even a little bit crazy, to say, show me your glory. Charles Spurgeon, that great preacher of Victorian England, he thought about this text and he wondered if perhaps Moses, when he said those words, please show me your glory, if he wasn't somewhat like Peter on the Mount of Transfiguration, when Peter asked for something, not really understanding what he said. So Moses, do you really understand what you're asking for? Do you want to see the transcendent God full in his radiant glory with how that confronting you so strongly right there? Can you bear the radiance of his glory? It's like saying, God, put me within a mile of the sun. It'd burn you up. You can't do it. But yet he asked for it. And this hunger for more of God, for more of an experience with God, is really a mark of revival. It's a mark of restoration of fellowship. You see, whatever Moses had experienced with God before, and it was impressive experience with God that Moses had enjoyed before, he wanted more. And I'll say this, a mark of someone who truly knows God is this, they want more of him. If you've ever really known God, it's evidence in your life that you want more of him. And if a person is just satisfied, well, yes, I had enough of God. It's like, great, I ate that and I never need to eat it again or something like that. You wonder if they ever really experienced God in who he is. So Moses continues on this idea. It started earlier in the chapter, but that God's people should want more than just his blessings, more than just his help. It's appropriate for them to want him. So he says in verse 18, show me your glory. Now friends, when we talk about the glory of God, it translates an ancient Hebrew word, and I know my pronunciation won't be good, but I'll just give it to you in essence. It's the ancient Hebrew word kabod. And kabod not only has the idea of glory, but just as much, it's very much linked to the idea of weight. It's something heavy. If it's light and fluffy like cotton candy, if it passes through and then it's soon forgotten, If it just sort of wisps around and never makes an impression, you have every reason to wonder, was that really the glory of God? Because kabod, the glory of God, it has weight. And Moses isn't just saying, would you please bless me? Would you please help me? No, God, I want to connect with you. I want to feel some of your weight, some of your essential presence. By the way, if I could just say this, and I feel it's important for me, it says, it makes me question sometimes what sometimes passes for the glory of God. When there are theatrics, when there are, you know, just sometimes silliness that happens and people cry out, oh, it's the glory of God, it's the glory of God. I want to know, where's the kabod? Where's the weight? Does it have any substance to it? If it's really the glory of God, it's not going to be like cotton candy. It's not going to be here today and gone tomorrow and just pass through and it never makes an impression. No, it'll have weight and substance to it. So now verse 19, then he said, this is God's response to Moses, I will make all my goodness pass before you, and I will proclaim the name of the Lord before you. I will be gracious to whom I'll be gracious, and I'll have compassion on whom I'll have compassion. But he said, you cannot see my face, for no man shall see me and live. Now this is so beautiful, it's so powerful. When Moses cries out in the earnestness, and maybe he's too bold here, I don't know, but he cries out and he says, show me your glory. You know what God says? He says, I'll show you my goodness. I'll make my goodness pass before you. Do you know what this shows us? It shows us that God's glory lies in his goodness. And when Moses saw the glory of God, his first understanding was that God was good. And if you don't understand that God is good, you don't understand very much about him at all. But I'll say this, and I'll say this in tenderness. I don't mean to beat anybody over the head, but there's some of you, you just need to correct your idea of God because you fundamentally think that God is not good. But ladies and gentlemen, just like the scriptures say, taste and see that the Lord is good. And when you think about all the different ways that potentially God could have revealed himself to Moses, he didn't reveal his justice to Moses. Is God a God of justice? Absolutely is. But he didn't say, I'll make my justice pass before you. He didn't say, I'll make my power pass before you. God is a God of power, is he not? He didn't say, I'll make my wrath against sin pass before you. All those things are absolutely true about God and his character. But when he says, when I really want you to know who I am, I'm going to show you a glimpse of my goodness. You're going to see it. Friends, there's sometimes people who feel that they need to balance God as if God is sort of made up, and I'll use sort of Eastern terms, a yin and a yang, you know, a positive and a negative, you know, like, and it's sort of our job to balance God between those two things. You know, there's a light and a dark, there's a good and an evil, there's a law and grace, and really where you're going to find God is somewhere right in the middle between law and grace. As if there's a balance. Where's God? Somewhere in the middle between good and bad. No! In that sense, there's no balance to God. He's all good. He's totally unbalanced in that way. There's no bad in him whatsoever. He is entirely good. And even his justice, and even his power, and even his wrath must be understood as aspects of his goodness. So when God means to reveal himself to Moses, look at what it says there in verse 19. He says, I will proclaim the name of the Lord before you. You see, in the thinking of the ancient Hebrews and also in other ancient cultures, the name represents a person's character. It represents a person's nature. And God said, I'm going to reveal my character to you. Now look, this is what you need to understand. The fullness of this, it's in chapter 34. When the Lord proclaims who he is, well, it's just a flow from an amplification of this. It says, I'm going to declare my name to you. It's okay, you can read ahead. That's entirely permissible. But notice this, verse 20, he says this, you cannot see my face, for no man shall see me and live. Now, God would not, indeed, he could not literally show Moses his face because the Bible tells us that no man can see God's face and live. Yet we have other passages like in Exodus chapter 33, verse 11, where it says God spoke to Moses face to face. Well, friends, when it says that God spoke to Moses face to face, it's using a Hebrew idiom that has the idea of free and unrestricted speech. In other words, they conversed freely. But please notice this. that Moses could not look upon the glory of God and behold it. It would be like somebody being a mile from the sun. You'd be burnt up. You'd be consumed. There'd be nothing left. Yet God says, as much as I can reveal myself to you for your own safety, I'm going to reveal myself to you. And that's going to happen in just a moment in verse 21. But I want to read you this quote from Martin Lloyd-Jones, a great expositor. He does wonderful work on this particular passage. He gives the idea of what God said to Moses. He says this, quote, I will stoop to your weakness. I'll let you see something. But much more important than that, I will cause all my goodness to pass before you. I'll give you a deeper insight and understanding into myself, into my character, into what I am. This is what you really need to know. And so here it comes, starting at verse 21. And the Lord said, here is a place by me, and you shall stand on the rock. And so it shall be, while my glory passes by, that I will put you in the cleft of the rock and will cover you with my hand while I pass by. Then I will take away my hand and you will see my back, but my face shall not be seen. God was about to reveal himself to Moses in a completely unique way. God prepared the event carefully. He gave Moses a specific place to stand. Okay, Moses, you want to see as much as me as you can see without perishing? Okay, first, you got to stand right in this place. And by the way, let me just add this quickly. Later on in 1 Kings chapter 19, the prophet Elijah met with God and had a remarkable experience with God. Some of you remember that, where God wasn't in the earthquake or wasn't in the storm or wasn't in the lightning, but he was in the still small voice. That very well may have been at the exact same place where Moses stood right here. Because both of them took place on Mount Sinai. And God says this, you stand right here, Moses. And then verse 22, while my glory passes by, I will put you in the cleft of the rock. God's glory could not remain in front of Moses. It had to pass him by. But even with that, Moses had to be protected by the hand and the cleft of the rock while the glory of God passed in front of him. And friends, this is a vivid and an enduring image. It's as if this, God puts his hand in front of where Moses is in the cleft of the rock, and then he passes by, and then he puts his hand back and withdraws it. Say, Moses, see that? We're going to see it in just a moment, get a little better understanding, but this is it. Protected by God, Moses could endure the glory of God. And passing before him, he had this great experience. When Isaiah saw God, he was aware of his own sin and unworthiness. When Paul went to heaven and experienced something of the glory of God, he felt like he couldn't utter it. But here, it's such an amazing experience that Moses, he hardly has the words to describe it, as we'll see in a moment. And this is what I want you to know, that other people beyond the times of the Bible have also experienced this presence, this glory of God. And I would not doubt that there would not be more, that there would be many people in this room who would give a similar testimony. This is what I mean. I think of the great colonial theologian in America, Jonathan Edwards. Jonathan Edwards described a time, and by the way, Jonathan Edwards was the most brilliant theologian that probably America has ever produced. He wasn't a flighty man given off to, you know, weird experiences, but he described a time of praying in the forest, kneeling for an hour that seemed to pass in just a few moments because of the powerful sense of God's glory and presence. Have you ever experienced something like that? Another great colonial man, the greatest missionary perhaps of colonial America, a man named David Brainerd, he described kneeling in the snow and praying for hours, literally sweating in his body, though it was freezing outside. Now, why would a man sweat in his body just praying, even though it's freezing outside? I'll tell you why. Because he was so aware of the presence of God, it was a physical reaction to his spiritual reality happening to him right there. Or another man, D.L. Moody. He sought God for just this kind of experience where he sought God in the same way Moses did, saying, show me your glory. And when God gave it to him, Moody says he had to ask God, pull it back. I fear that I'll die under this. You see, friends, there's just something to this. It makes us see that what many people speak of today as the presence of God and the glory of God seems so trivial to what Moses and Isaiah and Paul and Edwards and Brainerd and Moody experienced. There's no kabod to it. There's no weight to their experience of glory. And this is what Moses was about to see. Notice this, verse 23 says this. I will take away my hand and you will see my back, but my face shall not be seen. Moses could only see God's back. Now, I don't think, based on the Hebrew word that's used there and based on the context, I don't think it means God's physical back, because God the Father has no, you know, physical presence. The word back that's used there in the Hebrew is often used not for a literal, you know, anatomical back, but oftentimes it's used just for the behind of something, the after effect. I've heard it explained very well, and this is probably, I think this is what it means. It's sort of like the tail of the comet being the back of the comet. Moses, you can't see me, but you're going to see the after effects of where I have been. One commentator named Kaiser says this. He says, the word could just as well and more accurately be rendered the after effects of the radiant glory which had just passed by. It's as if the God says, Moses, how are we going to do it? You stand in the cleft of the rock, that protected place. I'll put my hand over you. I'll pass by. And once I'm safely by, I'll withdraw my hand. But then you can see the after effects. And that'll be all the glory that you can handle. And he saw it. And you see what God was doing. God was revealing himself. God was concealing himself. God was blessing Moses. God was protecting Moses. And all of these things happen when people truly seek God in the way that Moses sought God. And with all those special protections, God rewarded the desire of Moses to see as much of his glory as humanly possible. Let me conclude with this. First, can I give you just the encouragement as a pastor that you should seek the glory of God? Oh, not in some manufactured, manipulated way. I think we should despise all of that. But that you would plead to God as a man or a woman before him and say, God, there's something there that I can experience more of. Lord, would you guide me into it by your Holy Spirit? I think God would do that. Now listen, you'll have to let him do it in his way and in his time, because I'm not going to say how God will work that out for you in your life. But no, God will do it, I believe, if you'll seek him for it. But then secondly, and perhaps more importantly, as marvelous as this experience was for Moses, it cannot compare to the revelation of God given to us in Jesus Christ. Let me just end with this. Two beautiful passages from the New Testament. So I want you to think about this. Think about, you know, fill your mind with the display of glory, with the greatness of it all to Moses, with all that Moses experienced. And now I want you to put in frame of reference to these two passages. Ready? First, John chapter 1, verse 14. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. You want to see the glory of God? Look to Jesus. Look to who he is. Look to what he did for you. Look to who he is. Look to what he did for you. And God will display his glory to you. And then secondly, and I'm not even going to comment much on this. I'll just read it. Let it fill your soul. 2 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 18. But we all with unveiled face, beholding as in a mirror the glory of the Lord, are being transformed into the same image from glory to glory, just as by the Spirit of the Lord. If you experience the glory of God, it'll have a transforming effect in your life. It's not fluffy, it's not light, it's kabod, it's his weight.
The book of Exodus is packed full of symbolism that points us to Jesus. From the 10 plagues poured out upon Pharaoh and all those in Egypt, to the crossing of the Red Sea, Jesus will take center stage as we study this book. And of course, one of the most prominent sections of this book is the giving of the Ten Commandments. Even Hollywood has made movies about this event. And as we know, God's instructions for our lives are never burdensome and always meant to bring blessing. We encourage you to join us each day as Pastor David teaches through the book of Exodus. You've been listening to Enduring Word, the radio ministry of David Guzik, pastor of Calvary Chapel in Santa Barbara, California. It's our hope and prayer that as you join us each day here on Enduring Word, that you'll be drawn closer to Jesus and that your life will reflect that growing relationship. We encourage you to log on to enduringword.com and review this message or share it with a friend. Today's message, as originally presented at Calvary Chapel in Santa Barbara, California, can be downloaded from our website at enduringword.com. If you can't get to your computer to download or place an order, you can always call us at 805-730-1400. We'll be happy to help you. Again, that number is 805-730-1400. Now please, place a marker in your Bibles and make plans to join us again. Pastor David will continue teaching verse by verse through the book of Exodus, right here on Enduring Word.